Hello, photography lovers, and welcome to another episode of the Fashion Photography Podcast with me, your host, Virginia, and of course, with our gorgeous producer, George. I got a question for you. Do you ever wonder if your work has evolved in the past few years? If you're going in a better direction, especially in these difficult times? Well, today we are answering these questions along with Benjo Arwas. And before the start of the podcast, I would like to invite you to join our YouTube tribe and tune in for our Monday creative session. YouTube, the Fashion Photography Podcast. That's what you have to search for. And if you're new to the podcast, let me tell you that here you can find everything you want and everything you need to know about the fashion photography business, because every Wednesday I'm meeting a guest, a top artist from our industry. And every other Friday, I'm giving you some tips and tricks from my 12 years plus experience as a fashion and advertising photographer. So if you think this is something suitable for you, well then, definitely subscribe to the podcast. And of course, go to YouTube and search for the Fashion Photography Podcast. And now it's time for the interview.
Hello, my name is Benjo Arwas. I'm a photographer and director based in Los Angeles, and I'm very excited to be a part of the podcast again.
Again, because you've been here before, and if you guys, for some reason, haven't listened to our previous episode, you can find it in the show notes, linked below. Benjo, I remember that the last time that we talked, you actually told me that you're really into portfolio reviews. Do you still do that?
I honestly, since then, it's been 3 years from now, and I went to a few portfolio reviews, and the last time I went, actually, it was, I think, a year and a half ago. It was, I proposed my wife back then in New York during the portfolio reviews, so it was really exciting week for us.
Oh, congrats then!
Thank you very much. Yeah, this is one new thing, many of others, but I liked that portfolio review week. It was good and good reminder that, you know, we are eventually keeping printing and showing new work all the time. But I don't know now in my pace and my position and where I'm located right now if it's really beneficial for me. And I'd rather to put my energy into different marketing and different type of approach.
I'm really happy that you brought up the marketing topic, because also the last time that we talked, you told me that you prefer to reach out to clients on your own and you kind of rely on time and patience in order to reach those clients. So do you do something different now?
First of all, I'm always updating any platform I exist on the web. So, for example, my website, it's constantly being updated.
Let's mention to the people what's your website.
My website is benjoarwas.com.
Awesome.
I use aPhotofolio, and they are great web hosts for websites for advertising and any type of photographer. It's just a matter of taste of how you want to present your portfolio. I found it very nice, especially because I'm doing a lot of video work now, so I can combine my motion picture together with the stills. It's better to present this to clients because then they can have a better understanding of what's my abilities and what they can deliver to them.
I like the direction of the conversation going straight forward to clients.
We are business owners. Eventually, Coca-Cola did it big 100 years ago. Yeah. Why I cannot do it nowadays? We need to think like a brand. Every person is a brand.
But before that, a brand should be advertised well, right? So we talk about marketing. Tell me, what else do you do for your marketing?
It's funny you're asking, Virginia, because exactly 23 minutes ago, I released a newsletter for all my fashion and advertising clients, domestically in the US specifically. So I am doing quarterly newsletter where I'm dividing it between fashion, beauty, and editorial work, where I'm sending out a newsletter with my most recent 2 to 4 jobs. And, you know, with a nice note to the people and It's a give and take. Some people don't like it, like anything in the art world, so they will unsubscribe. And some people will love it, will click, and actually will reach out to book for a campaign, for editorial, or just to be curious about what's happening.
That's actually a great topic. So you're dividing it on three different categories. Do you divide your emails and the recipients, or you email the whole thing to the same list of people?
I'm dividing. Each type of work will go to a different list of people, because I think each audience will want to see a specific thing, and I don't want to push them content. You know, it's nice to show some personal and some other work, but people are busy. I'm busy. When I'm opening a newsletter, if it's not in my interest, sorry, you know, it's not on the day topic.
How often do you send an email like this?
It's like quarterly. It's like every season kind of thing. Now I send Happy New Year and winter work. Before that, I send fall work, and before that, summer. So every season, when I have at least 2 to 3 jobs coming out that I'm very proud and I want to share it, so I do it, you know, why not?
Do you share it with your previous clients, or maybe even with future clients, people that you want to attract and brands that you want to have in your portfolio?
Definitely with both. So I will keep and maintain my past clients, even if they moved on and already shooting with other people and doing other things. There is no such thing as end of a bridge in this industry, you know, because one day our director moving from one brand to another and tomorrow they will be in a different brand. So we always keep it in touch, and there is no such thing like burning a bridge with an old client. I always keep them updated and what's going on, and always sending a note and keep them on my mind.
It's definitely very important to stay in touch with people, but do you really know everybody in your list? The people that you are sending newsletters to?
No, 95% of the people, I have no clue who they are.
So you have found their emails and now you're kind of doing your own marketing there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a process of a few years already. When I was a student like 5, 6 years ago, and I used to go on LinkedIn and sourcing email addresses and being very curious who's working and who is doing what. Of course, past 6 years already, so many people shifted their positions, you know. Nobody's staying in the same spot for so long. So I all the time keep in maintaining this list based on the people that I'm interested in their brand or what are they doing, or even if they're aesthetic and eye and visual, it's cool. I want to send them some stuff as well from portfolio reviews. I once was subscribed to Agency Access, so I gathered a lot of email addresses from there. My agent providing me a lot of contacts as well as my syndication. So there's a lot of sources that I keep in updating my lists.
Have you ever had a situation when, for example, you're sending an email and someone is replying, "Hey, how do you have my email? I don't want to receive this," or something similar to that?
Yeah, of course. I see it as myself, okay? I will send people what I assume they will want to see. It's almost a psychology of advertising and marketing. You send out something you want someone to open and see. For them, it's a privilege. They can decide if they want to put it in the trash or to keep it. I saw many emails coming back, like, first of all, unsubscribers. My point of view, it's not very aggressive, but it's like, okay, he unsubscribed. It's their problem.
Yeah, it's a good mindset.
And some people definitely email back like, "Hey, how did you get my email address? Blah, blah, blah. Take me off the list." Again, it's their decision to make this kind of comment or anything. But I am aware when I'm sending out a newsletter that I might receive this kind of comments. But out of the people I'm sending out, I'm always trying to focus on the positive and who is actually opening and interested, and all the time persuading them more and more, and, you know, always working on myself to create a better content to present to these people in the future.
I love your mindset. It sounds like you're not wasting your nerves.
No, I got married recently, like 4 months ago. Got married to my best friend, and we are very happy now. And it took us time to put the mindset, because we are both photographers.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes, my wife is amazing, incredible photographer. She really emerging very fast, and she got her unique eye and aesthetics. I really respect her, and I'm very excited to see how she's going to develop and evolve herself in this industry, or in general, you know, as people. So We learned after getting married that there is so much nerves in personal life, especially not only in this photo business and this industry, which is a totally different brain. Like, I need to develop a separate brain for my own brain just to think for the industry. I learned to stretch. I use a lot the word stretching. Nothing will happen today. If we email today someone, they won't respond today. They're busy. They have other things to do. It's the same, like, I won't respond right away to someone that's reaching out to me. Sometimes it's on the go. I'm on set or I'm busy. I'm on the phone. I don't have the moment even to review whatever somebody sent me. So I put myself in their shoes too. If I sent a newsletter now, it might even take 2 years until this person will actually recognize the work and will start reaching out. And I'm totally aware of it. So I'm really trying to stretch my mindset from tomorrow to, like, okay, so in 2 more months. Life is long eventually. We're thinking, I'm now 33, almost 34. I hope to live long till like 80, 90, hopefully, with technology and medicine. So I have another 60 years or 50 years of living these moments, you know? So why everything has to be tomorrow? It doesn't. So I really focus my nerves and spreading them out into, like, okay, so not today, tomorrow. Everything is okay. Everybody need to chill.
We should remember that, I think. Everybody needs to chill. Now, when I know that your wife is also a photographer, I'm also very excited about this. Is she working in the same field as you?
She is and she's not. She's really approaching an artistic way.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a lot of nice portraits of talents, young celebrities, some fashion. She shoots for some cool fashion brands. I don't know if she shares much of it, but she's making a living as I did 5, 6 years ago when I was younger in this industry.
I think it's great that she has you next to her because it's so easy to learn and live through things when you have someone that have already been on this path so that she can ask you about everything. For example, you said that you had access to agency access, which is actually a service. And I think it's good for both of you, right? But maybe someone in the audience have no idea what this is. So maybe you can help us with that. And also tell us about your opinion. Should we become part of agency access?
So regarding agency access specifically, there are a few other brands that are doing it amazing, like Production Paradise, Workbook, Le Book. There is so many different agencies that providing email addresses of industry people that you can reach out paid, like you need to pay for the services. I'm 6 years out of school, and I think everybody need to go through this kind of experience if it works for them. Because it might not be for everyone. It depends who is your audience, what is your hometown and market, what's happening around you.
Mm-hmm.
I learned we need to be close to the plate in order to actually work with some people in the market. It's a matter of individual decision. Some people rather not to pay for these services. Some people doing it every year for years, for like maybe 10 years. But it's individual decision.
And did it work for you?
For me, it worked at some place, but I realized that it doesn't draw that much engagement. So I passed and I started to do my own little things, which more developing my digital aesthetics and my Instagram and my website. So I'm working more on myself other than relying on others to provide me the job, which I think this is the formula I found that works the most, because this is where you can actually provide your voice to the people that you want to share your voice with.
I actually remember from our previous podcast that you kind of had the same mindset before because you were reaching out to clients by yourself, but now you have an agency. So why do you think you need an agency?
Yeah, my agent, Jackie at Scene Artist, I love her. She's like my second mom. I talk to her more than my own parents every day. She's aware that she's not only my agent, but my psychologist. She's amazing. I'm just like in hours and hours talk to her from day-to-day life to personal things to the industry to anything. But, you know, we're always trying to keep it positive with a good note and learning process because every day I'm learning something totally new about everything. So Having Jackie with me, it's been a good journey so far, because I found myself 2 years ago, I think it was summer 18. I didn't have an agent back then. When I found myself on sets with a client, and, you know, I would say it out loud, but we all know the situation when everybody on their phone and everyone are busy and no one really paying attention on set. And I find myself, you know, very busy, shooting back to back, restless nights, restless days, all the time in post and prep. It was a madhouse. And I really needed some help. So I reached out only to her because she was the first came like on my feed or something. I remember following. I reached out to Jackie. She said she's going to review the work and get back to me the week after. She got back to me the day after. We had a good chat and we signed. And ever since, I'm not on my phone anymore on sets because I don't need to be. I have Jackie backing me up when I'm not available and when I'm on set or when I'm busy. So I'm more present with the people. And that's what I found very helpful in my career, that I can actually be present with a client in 2020 instead of being on my phone dealing with estimates, with bids, with production. You know, it can be a madhouse sometimes on the phone and emails. So Jackie really helped me to cluster everything and to make it more smooth for my days.
Jackie is for sure helping you also with the budgeting, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Tell us about your biggest problems before having an agent, and maybe we can dive deeper into the topic of budgets.
Before Jackie, it was only in direct contact with a client. So it can be tricky sometimes, you know, when we are having a client and you need to discuss production, but then as well money. And it's not always appropriate, you know, to like, okay, another two rolls of film. So I tell the client on set, like, okay, it's an extra amount of money. It was very sometimes not comfortable because a lot of clients, when you don't have agent, I don't know if it's naturally, but they try to drag a bit more and to take a little more advantage of what you're able to do. And they know you'll say yes, because we are service people. I will say yes, and I won't be a jerk or turn my back and say, no, it's too many looks or stuff like that. I will always agree to it. Now, having Jackie with me, it helps me. Why? Because first of all, if we decided on 20 looks per day, we are trying to stand in it, you know. Although, even if we have 25, I will do the 25, no problem. I'm not disabled, I can still click. But there's some sort of respect and agreement, because there is a third party that's standing for you, and she's like, not a bad teacher, but she's like, hey guys, we agreed on that, so let's do that. We cannot do more of this or that, unless I'm comfortable with it.
Do you have an advice for the people that don't have an agent and they have to somehow handle situations like this on their own?
First of all, we're service providers. So when always we say the client's always right, so I always try and respectfully to approach and to gain respect for myself too.
Yeah.
Eventually, if I'm telling them, okay, my rate is X amount of money and it is what it is, and then they just adding up more things on top of it without paying more for usage or for any other thing. Some clients, honestly, are not even educated about usages, and they don't even know what's the meaning of copyright infringement or usage, you know?
Absolutely.
So with that said, I'm always trying to be very sensitive with my clients when it's dealing with them directly. I still have a few clients I'm dealing with them directly, without Jackie, because me and Jackie came to an agreement that all clients I still handle and future clients she's going to handle. Although I got to a position that she owns 99% of my clients because of I'm just too busy now to deal with everyone, which is a good problem.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I'm trying to be very sensitive with them and to be, you know, they know me for years, these clients that they still deal with them directly. And even the ones that are dealing with Jackie, some of them know me for years. Always trying to be mindful of what they need, mindful of their budget, trying to accommodate all the time. Nowadays, I say that ego is for the small people. If I can do something for the client and to give them the extra mile, I will always do it, regardless of the budget or anything.
In this case, are there clients that are not your clients? people that you don't want to work with for one reason or another. Maybe the budget is way too small. Maybe their ego is too big. Maybe the project is very different from what you would do. Do you really need every client that shows up on your door?
Eventually, I did in the beginning of my journey, as I see it. You know, 6 years, it's not much of actually working. And if we really think practically, it's been 5 or 4 years that I'm actually working. And there are so many different shifts. I used to have a studio for 3 years. I gave the studio away. And now I'm like on my own, running around renting big spaces and shooting on location. I think I really market myself to be capturing visual content nowadays, more than like, oh, this work is better than the other one. No, everybody that's reaching out, I can actually contribute them something new and fresh. So I don't mind even if it's a yoga brand or even if it's a fashion or beauty or cosmetic. If they want and they see something interesting in my work, I will make it interesting for them.
Why did you decide to give up your studio?
You remember when we talked last time,
yeah.
I still had my studio. I was in my studio. We talked about it too.
You did, and you were very proud of it, I remember. And I was really surprised to know that you have a studio in LA because it's expensive. It's a big thing to have your own studio. And most of the people rent. So I remember that I was very surprised that you do have your own studio. And now when I hear that you have given up on it, I'm even more interested.
Let me put it in more generic words. Mm-hmm. Owning your own studio and having your own studio, it's almost having like a fancy car.
Yeah, exactly.
After a year or two, you realize like, why do I have it? And I don't really need it. So let's just live life.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good. It was really great. A lot of my content, my experiments, my nights and days I spent in the studio, it was such a great space for everyone around me too. The clients came, they were very happy. The celebrities came over, was really happy. Everything was great, the location. Anyway, just because of that, I gave it up. I gave it away because I was too comfortable.
Oh.
When I get too comfortable, my brain starts itching and I need something new and I make a concrete decision and I move on. Mm-hmm. I never stayed in one spot more than like 1 or 2 years. It really helped me to develop and challenge myself by leaving the studio.
Many people actually say exactly the opposite, that they cannot produce enough work simply because they don't have a studio. And it's weird because you do produce a lot of work even now when you don't have your own studio. So let's talk about this. Are there any limitations when you don't own your own space?
There are limitations. Let's say if back then somebody reached out like, hey, do you want to shoot this guy or this girl? And I had time, so I would be like, yeah, of course, come tomorrow at 1 p.m. Let's do something real fast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's still something I receive and approaching to do, but I'm more calculated nowadays. I do a lot more than what I used to do, especially on the scale of the jobs and projects I'm working on are way bigger with video involved and much bigger teams and locations. So I won't say yes to all these kind of things. But if I say yes, downtown LA, I can rent a studio space for $40-$50 an hour, put out of pocket like $300 and enjoy the day with the team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to own a space and to have the overhead rent for it because it's limiting. To have your own space, eventually all my work was studio work. For 3 years, all my work was studio work. And then I'm opening my site and I'm like, wow, I got this client want to shoot on location and I have nothing to show them, like nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. The moment I went out of the studio, I shoot locations all over the place. I really, truly enjoy Los Angeles right now as my playground because I can go from the mountain and the desert. Next day, shooting at the beach in Malibu. I use LA as my playground right now.
Now that you don't have a studio, does it mean that you no longer produce personal work?
Eventually, what I look in between all this madness and craziness, it's how can I still create something for myself? Because let's say that 90% of the projects are just lined up for you, are not necessarily going in my books. And it's just helping my progression in my career, but not to my personal level. And for the personal level, I am booking my own studio, booking my team, booking the model, writing a concept, writing a narrative, bringing my film camera out of pocket, my video out of pocket, the editing out of pocket, and creating a new visual and a new piece that can inspire clients and many others, eventually the creation. Eventually, whatever I'm not doing with a client, I will remember that I can do it by myself. I don't need a client to provide me the tools because I am the one that providing the tools. I'm the one that actually coming up with these ideas.
I think that's the best part about doing passion projects, actually, because these are the projects that are bringing you back clients. Because in the passion project, you can pour your heart and soul into. It's not always the same with the client's project.
Definitely not. Now, you know how it is. When it's commissioned work, they want a specific angle, the specific lighting angle, the specific color palette. I respect it. But slowly, slowly, Virginia, I see that, you know, there's the art and the commerce. Now, the commerce is strong. I know that they can deliver and provide good content, visual and imagery for the client for whatever they need. But then comes the art. And I'm starting slowly, slowly, happily to understand how I can make the art and commerce happening together so people will hire me for the art, not just for the clean whatever shot that you fought for.
That was exactly what I was going to say, that nowadays there are people that are emerging those two, and I think these are the people that are on top of the industry.
Yeah, I'm still not there, but I'm definitely now in the process that if it used to be very drastically, like on the right side, the commerce, and on the left side, the art, you know, very separated body of work. Slowly, slowly, you'll see how, and you'll see because it's up and coming out soon. It's shoots you haven't seen yet, but how my commerce work become art and people hiring me to do the art that they did on my passion projects and to do it for their own campaign. And that's the rewarding moment when you try to set a voice and use it as an art, test, passion project, experiment, and clients actually picking on it and like, oh, I want my next campaign to look exactly like this project you've done.
Yeah.
Or write something for me, like you did this quirky video or something. People love it and it's fresh. And it's, even for myself, sometimes it's surprising because it's like, wow, this client wants something like that shot on 16 millimeter. It's like impossible. Because they're very polished, they're very like commercial, how they come into this texture, you know?
Are they ever worried that they cannot see the footage right away?
There are a few clients, yeah. I shot a big campaign last week, honestly, and the client decided that they want like 70% on digital and 30% on film. Mm-hmm. I still didn't even got my film back, but they already working on the digital. But I know exactly what's going to be on the film that can contribute to the final piece.
You're still shooting between LA and New York, right?
Yeah, and New York is a different background, and that's amazing. The urban, the buildings, very inspiring, the light. It's always something magic when I'm clicking in New York. It's very rewarding to fly out there and to work in New York as well.
It's a different background, but is it also a different type of community of clients?
It is most of the time, although a lot of my clients from New York shooting with me in LA as well. So it's become almost like the same team, just different background or different scenario. But the mentality type of people in New York, it's just different audience and different demographic than what we have in Los Angeles for the local market. The local market in Los Angeles, it's great. It's great, great, great. Not only for fashion, but lifestyle, celebrity, cosmetics. It's really big right now. Just Nike moved over here. So it's opened way much more jobs to emerging photographers and young people that want to do some e-com or product photography. There is so much to have in, I think, in every city, honestly. There is local market. But New York, it's a bit different because, yes, we have the more access for fashion and the magazines have more access over there and type of stylists and people working in New York are bigger and like have a bit more establishment in their career. It doesn't mean that they are better, but it's just a different market.
What type of qualities do you think a photographer in New York and a photographer in LA needs to fit in to the market?
New York is definitely a bit more fast-paced. Like, I never got to New York from LA on a normal day flight. I always fly in red eye to the set and fly back to LA, red eye to another set in LA. And sometimes back and forth in 1 week. I did it like 2 months ago. I was flying back and forth in 1 week twice. You know, when Jackie even told me like, wow, it's like, aren't you exhausted and stuff? I told her, Jackie, I'm 34 now. You can expect me to do all this craziness now when I'm still young. In 10 more years, forget about it. I will never do it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, New York really demands the fast pace, fast decision making, problem solving, to be very confident in the decision you're making, because the people around you, they know what they want and they know what they need. There is no room for hesitation or doubts. Where in LA, the people are the same, but I think the environment causing a bit more stretchiness and you can prep a bit longer over here.
What do you think are your qualities? Because you're fitting in both places. There must be something very unique about you.
The fact that I live in Los Angeles doesn't mean that Los Angeles is my market. I just talked about it with my wife last night, actually. Mm-hmm. I told her, Sam, we live in Los Angeles. I'm not living here because this is my market. I live here because this is my background. And if I want to shoot at the beach, I will shoot at the beach. And if I want the desert, I can do the desert. If I want urban, I will go downtown and shoot something urban. So I use LA as my background and I love the weather. That's it. Most of my clients are coming from New York, coming from Europe, coming from the Latin America market. I have maybe two clients that are based in Los Angeles.
That is so very interesting, actually.
I position myself here right now because this is my background. Like, I invite clients to come here to my home, like my place, to shoot. I'm like, hey, you want a beach? Let's go there. You want desert? Let's go Joshua Tree, 29 Palms, anywhere. I invite them here to the local, how you call it, like in football, to the home stadium.
You invite them for photos, but also for video, especially lately, right?
Yeah, the video been a really interesting journey. Happy accident, as they say.
Tell us more about this. Don't stop just here.
My education I gained in Brooks Institute of Photography. I think we did discuss it last podcast too. Unfortunately, yeah. The university closed 2 years ago. Very unfortunate, due to some money issues. And you asking me now about school, yes or no? I still think yes, but I'm not sure if the schools will provide the students what I got to study 8 years ago, mm-hmm. when there was still large format, still shooting on film, still having very hard assignments and very tight deadlines for each assignment. I really hope some schools still providing this kind of education, because I don't regret every second I was sitting in Brooks Institute. Helped me so much to develop myself as a photographer, as an artist, to know the history of everything. But talking about video, so in Brooks, we learned some minimal DSLR video. You know, we learned how to do cut from A to B and how to make a person going from one place to another and to show in a small story. You know what I mean? Like in general, just the basics of video.
Yeah.
And some editing too. After leaving school, I don't remember myself doing that much video. I think the videos I've done was more like of an experiment, or if I will hire a DP or someone to come and to do whatever they know, because they have no clue about it. For me, the journey into video started with self-realization, I think around 2017, when I stopped doing my journals. Due to time and a lot of craft that I didn't have the patience anymore to sit and to do this overnights. You remember I used to do all these journals and crafts.
I do.
And
printing, I love them.
Cutting. I really enjoyed it. I still miss doing it, honestly. You know, I kind of sometimes I feel like I left myself over there and I continued with a new self to a new journey, mm-hmm. which is not a bad thing. But, you know, I do miss these days. It was amazing. I started to see that my work, okay, it started to be consistent. It's picture, picture, picture. And what's new? What's the next challenge? Always looking for the next challenge and not to get too comfortable. So one day I was shooting for a company downtown LA. We were shooting like a few days lookbook and campaign. And the model came into set with a Super 8 camera. She was so sweet. She showed me the camera. She showed me how on eBay she bought it. She showed me a test roll she did with it, developed in New York, blah, blah, blah. I have no clue about video and especially about film photography with video, Super 8 and stuff like that. I got interested, you know. I saw, okay, what, just for like $200? Let's try. I bought a camera. I got it from eBay. I have no clue even how to test it. I don't know. I started Googling things and to learn by my own. Okay, so I bought one roll in the local, black and white. There's Sammy selling only black and white Super 8 rolls. So I bought this black and white. And I called a model friend of mine to come and to do a small test. And we went to the studio. I literally rolled a few clicks on the Super 8. I finished. Took me just like 2 weeks maybe to understand where am I now developing it? How do I scan it to digital? What's the process? No one gave me any education for it. Everything trying to learn by myself. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a journey. It was amazing because I released that small test video on my Instagram and the feedback I got was, wow, I didn't know that this kind of thing actually making such a buzz. And then I started to develop more and more. And then I start seeing that if I shoot something stills, the way I shoot it, I could shoot it on motion too. So I started to develop stories and started to develop corresponding video motion picture to the actual still pictures. And it's become almost like a workflow. Like I will run between video camera to stills camera constantly nowadays. And it just developed my brain and my vision in a different way. I don't see only like a pose and background. I see how we move in it to a different place and telling a short stories. And then I started to write and I started to learn about writing and filmmaking by myself and about narrative and started to study the history of filmmaking and, you know, looking at all these old movies and filmmakers and directors that now I'm very, very inspired by. Like Louis Buñuel, Jean-Luc Godard, many other ones that like, wow, mind-blowing, what people thought about in the 40s, 60s. So I'm really now in this limbo of like between still doing and maintaining my photo business and my aesthetic, but developing a passion for filmmaking and trying to project a new message to the world or to contribute something, you know, even if it's sad or even to make you smile. I want the reaction. Mm-hmm. And I can get a bit more of it with the video than stills, I think. So I think it's almost corresponding to my stills photography.
You know the drill, guys. Next week on Wednesday, we'll be together for part two of this interview. If you're hungry for more, come over to our YouTube channel, The Fashion Photography Podcast, for a live behind-the-scenes look of Nicole's York magical photography. This is going to happen on Monday on our YouTube channel, The Fashion Photography Podcast. Thank you guys again so much for being with me, and I cannot wait to see you next week.